prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Very important show today. This is, you know, a lot of the things that we've talked about on the show over the years about the medical orthodoxy, the pharmaceutical agenda, and so on and so forth has kind of come together today in this show with my guest. My guest today is Dr. John Abramson, and he was a Robert Wood Johnson Fellow and is currently a part of the clinical faculty over at Harvard Medical School. And he is the author of the book, Overdosed America, The Broken Promises of American Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Abramson.
Hey, Carl. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. There's a little disclaimer that you wanted to do before we started this, because you actually testify as a professional witness in these types of issues, correct?
Absolutely, and I think it's very important when listeners, when anybody is hearing information about healthcare, that the financial relationships of the person who's speaking should be made very clear, whether they work for the drug companies, whether they work for medical device companies or hospitals or insurers or whatever. And I think it's very important for your listeners to know that I serve as an expert to plaintiff's attorneys in litigation involving the pharmaceutical industry, and that I've served as a consultant, an unpaid consultant to the Department of Justice as well.
Okay, and I want to say something else that I think the listeners would find very interesting, because I did. I asked you if you wanted to plug any of your upcoming speaking engagements, and you said that you didn't want to, and the reason was that the pharmaceutical industry actually shows up at them and kind of rails against you, don't they?
That has definitely happened. So on my website, I stopped putting my upcoming talks so that they can't be searched by somebody who wants to disrupt a talk.
Isn't that amazing? That's amazing. Okay. All right. Let's.
Well, there's so much, Carl, there's so much money on the line. There's so many billions of dollars on the line for getting the truth out about how our healthcare system is being distorted by these commercial interests, that anybody would be completely naive if they didn't think there was going to be an enormous reaction against a person who was trying to help the public to understand what's going on.
And I've said it over and over again that there is a parasitic relationship between the pharmaceutical industry and we people. And that parasitic relationship is designed not to necessarily cure us of any diseases, but to exploit those diseases and keep us on drugs for long terms. I mean, when you look at just diabetes, for instance, most people can be completely resolved of type 2 diabetes within 6 months, but you'll never have anyone in the medical orthodoxy pushing that at them as fast as they'll push glucophage or something like that at them. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And one of the things I go into this in my book, Overdosed America, if you give 250 diabetic patients a statin drug, the studies show that you'll save one life a year. Now, that's a pretty good thing. If you get 250 diabetic patients exercising, you'll save five lives a year. But the doctors don't know that. And the reason why they don't know that is because most of the knowledge that doctors believe from the legitimate sources that they've been taught to trust comes to them either directly or indirectly from the pharmaceutical industry and the healthcare industry, Carl. And the biggest problem we've got is that the fundamental responsibility of the drug industry or the medical device industry is their primary fiduciary obligation is to make the most money they can for their shareholders, not to provide the best health, not to provide the most efficient health care, but to make the most money for their shareholders. And there's this sort of fantasy that industry, that the health care industry, somehow has a different primary responsibility than other industries. And until we as a nation and the physicians especially understand that, we're going to be drink-laid from the commercial sources, and they're designed not to make us healthier, but to make them wealthier.
You know, that's really important because I think that it's unspoken. And I was going to ask you, what is you say in the cover of the book, the broken promise of the American of American medicine. What is the implied promise, you think, of American medicine? And I think that leads into what you just said, why we trust.
That's exactly right. The implied promise of American healthcare is that we Americans will get the best healthcare that's available and that it will provide us with the greatest opportunity to live a healthy life. That's the implied promise. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Don't you all? But I think it goes even deeper than that. I think that I think we believe that doctors and companies that do research and everything in between have this altruistic mission that that life and health and do no harm is the most important thing, and that profits a second, but that is an illusion, isn't it?
It's an illusion, and it's frankly just plain not the truth. The Wall Street Journal pages understand it. The pages of the New York Times business section understand it. The primary obligation of the healthcare industry is to maximize their profits and return those profits to their shareholders.
And that's what they were doing when they slipped Vioxx to everybody.
I mean, that's what they were doing.
Let me ask you a question. You talk about in your book that clinical research is compromised because it's predominantly funded by the pharmaceutical companies and the medical equipment companies. Is that true? I mean, is it 80% of it?
No, it's not. 85% of it is.
So it's worse than that. Okay. So
85% of clinical trials, it's much worse, Carl, because 85% now commercially funded, and 97% of the most influential trials, the kinds of trials that your listeners' doctors are reading and making their decisions based upon, 97% of the most influential clinical trials are commercially sponsored.
So, okay. The people doing the research, these are good people. These are honorable people. These are learned scholars. So are you saying that A, they would compromise their results? Or are you saying B, that when their results is not in step with the agenda, it's pushed aside?
It's even more serious. Over the past 30 years, up until the mid-70s or late 70s, most researchers could get funding from the National Institutes of Health, public funding, government funding, to conduct research whose only purpose was to find out how to provide better health to people. But that funding dried up when President Reagan came to Washington in 1980, and he inherited a bad economy, and he came with a mandate to downsize government. And one of the first things he downsized was the funding for clinical trials at the National Institutes of Health. So pharmaceutical company funding for clinical trials went up sixfold between 1977 and 1990. So what that meant is academics who were trained as researchers, whose God-given skills brought them to medical research with the highest of motives, had to turn to commercial interests to get funding or else they couldn't do their research. And then once the commercial funding gets in, then researchers actually lose control of the research. They often don't have access to their own data.
Really?
Free access to their own data.
I'm startled. I don't even know what to say about that. So in other words, they don't even know what the results of their own study is because another entity is controlling the final results.
Is controlling it, has the data locked up like the recipe for Coke. So one of the reasons why Vioxx became such an enormous debacle in our society, conservatively 40,000 Americans died from taking Vioxx. And one of the reasons that happened is there was an article in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the most trusted journal in the world, that was published in November of 2000 that claimed that Vioxx was a safer drug than naproxen or Aleve for arthritis because it caused fewer gastrointestinal problems.
Yeah.
And yeah, they admitted that there were some extra heart problems, but they said they weren't significant. Well, it turned out that three heart attacks were not included in that New England Journal of Medicine article in November of 2000. And had those three heart attacks been included, it would have changed the entire statistical picture, and it would have given the message to doctors that Vioxx significantly increased the risk of heart attack whether or not a patient had a previous heart history. So when that finally came out, when the New England Journal of Medicine editors finally decided to deal with that publicly in 2005, they wrote an expression of concern, and they said, look, we want to hear from the 13 authors why you didn't include those three heart attacks
right.
5 years ago. And there were two different responses to that, Carl. One was from the two authors who were Merck employees, and they said, we knew about the heart attacks, and we felt for statistical reasons they shouldn't be included. And the other 11 authors who were not Merck employees wrote back and said, we did not know about the three heart attacks.
How terrible.
Including the lead author of the article.
How terrible. That is disgusting. That is disgusting to me. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Dr. Abramson about his book, Overdosed America, The Broken Promise of American Medicine. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The federal government is more aggressive than ever prosecuting anabolic steroid-related cases. Whether you're a physician, supplement company, or citizen, ignorance of the law is not a defense. Buying from overseas pharmacies, large numbers of patients on hormone replacement therapy, and releasing new hormone-based supplements can all be red flags to the federal government. Don't take chances. You need attorneys that have years of experience defending anabolic steroid-related cases. You need J. Clark Baird and Bill Butler. Knowledge is power. Know where you stand before the federal government comes knocking. Go to SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. That's SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. Go today and be safer tomorrow.
All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com. A company committed to truth in advertising, to science-driven product development, a company that still believes in accountability to its customers. All American EFX is that company. With a full line of performance-enhancing aids like Prealkaline EFX Pro, muscle pump amplifiers like Nitrix EFX, growth and recovery enhancers like LBA Pro and LG5 Pro, and a fully tested core nutrition series. So if you want the very best in bodybuilding and performance supplements, go to any GNC or visit AAEFX.com today. That's AAEFX.com. All American EFX. We don't play games. We just help you win them. Selective androgen receptor modulators represent the future of hormone replacement therapy. Institutions looking to perform research depend upon the potency and authenticity of the materials they buy. That's why your institution needs to trust Chemex for their SARMS materials. Go to chemx.net today for SARMS S4 for your research project. Don't trust the success of your project to questionable sources. Trust chemx.net. That's chemx.net. Chemex.net. Life is a continuous journey, and Change Your Life Now gives you the tools for continuous empowerment. Change Your Life Now is a practical guide to the biological process of age reversal. It's deliberately understandable and concise, so you can employ its message immediately and begin to realize the changes within days. The reader need only provide a positive attitude, desire, and discipline, and the results are guaranteed. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Change Your Life Now banner ad to learn more or to order your copy today. Don't wait another moment. Change your life now.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest today is Dr. John Abramson, the author of Overdosed America, The Broken Promise of American Medicine. You can get a copy of it at Amazon.com. It is a fantastic book. Everyone needs to read this book. You need to be armed. You need to read this book before you walk in to see your doctor next time, because you need to be armed with this information. You know, we're way too trusted. We don't trust our butchers. We don't trust our garage attendants. We don't trust anybody the way we trust our doctors. And that has to change. They're not bad people, but we need to be the shepherds of our health, not them. Dr. Abramson, did anybody go to jail for Vioxx?
No.
You know, that's one of those things that strikes me every time I hear these types of stories, because I know that if I sold a product and covered up information that caused three people to die, I'd probably go to jail for that.
I think you would and you should. I think if you stole $20 from the neighborhood convenience store, you should go to jail.
Okay. Why don't people go to jail?
Nobody went to jail for Vioxx, and Pfizer about a year ago was fined $2.3 billion for fraudulent marketing and alleged fraudulent marketing. They pled guilty to fraudulent marketing for $1.3 billion of that. That's the largest criminal fine in U.S. history, ever, for anything. One person got probation for that.
No one went to jail.
No one went to jail.
And so
I think
that the crime is big enough and it makes enough money and you can pay the VIG, so to speak, you don't have to go to jail in this country.
Yeah, you know, we talk about banks being too big to fail, and sometimes you think about these companies being too big to jail.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. I'm going to steal that out of your book, Too Big to Jail. I love that. That's good.
That's post-book.
Now, you mentioned something during the pre-interview about Pfizer. Recently, you testified in a case. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I can. It's public knowledge now, although not much news got out about it.
No, I was shocked to hear about it. I mean, it's public knowledge, but they did a really, really good job of keeping it really low on the radar.
They sure did. In March of this year, 2010, there was a month-long trial in federal court in Boston. Kaiser Health Plans, the nonprofit health plan, with about 8 million subscribers, Kaiser Health Plans sued Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company, alleging that Pfizer had misrepresented the science and illegally marketed Neurontin for off-label use, for migraine headaches, for neuropathic pain, and for bipolar disorder.
Right, and for the generic is gabapentin of Neurontin, correct? It's a very powerful drug, right?
That's correct, and it was originally approved as a seizure medicine,
right?
And then was gained approval for post-herpetic neuralgia after shingles. Sometimes the nerves remained inflamed, and it gained FDA approval for that. But up to 93% of Neurontin was used off-label, and that was no accident, said Kaiser to Pfizer. The trial went on for a month. It was a wonderful privilege for me to be able to testify in that trial and explain to the jury exactly what happened. And the judge did a wonderful job of making sure that the jury understood. I felt like I was in a medical school classroom with these jurors who, you know, had no special training in medicine. They just walked in off the street like any jury. In any event, the jury deliberated for 2 days and found Pfizer not just guilty of fraud, and awarded Kaiser the $42 million that it said it got defrauded of. But the jury found Pfizer guilty of racketeering, like gangsters, like RICO violations.
Right, that's what they used to take guys down like John Gotti and people like that to destroy their empires. They used the RICO Act.
That's why the RICO Act was passed. And the jury found that using the criteria of racketeering in the RICO Act, that Pfizer, the biggest drug company in the world, was guilty of racketeering, and therefore the $42 million that the jury found Kaiser had been defrauded of was tripled. And with interest, Pfizer has to pay Kaiser $147 million.
Beautiful.
And there was virtually no news coverage of it. Bloomberg had a paragraph, and I think Reuters had a paragraph. The New York Times never picked it up in the print section. The Boston Globe, my local paper, had one paragraph about it. And when I lecture to audiences of doctors, about 1 out of 100 physicians knows that Pfizer was found guilty of fraud and racketeering.
And yet again, no one went to jail. Because I know a lot, in most cases where the RICO Act is applied, people go to jail as well as lose all of their belongings because they attribute that the money that was gained through racketeering bought these things, so now the government owns them. And that's the way usually the RICO Act is used to expunge somebody.
That's in a criminal
case
litigation. Okay. This is civil litigation.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, all right. Now, do you? I mean, what about where do doctors fall into all of this? Okay, so we have this parasite industry, the pharmaceutical industry, who really doesn't care.
Well, I think you're being too hard, Carl. I think we want to be fair. We have an industry that's doing what its primary responsibility is, which is making as much money as it can for its shareholders. And it does that by portraying itself as the benefactor of mankind.
Okay. But where do doctors fall into this? Doctors obviously are the connection to the patient. They are the ones prescribing these drugs. Why aren't doctors holding back and not prescribing these drugs?
That's exactly the right question to be asking. And there are some doctors who are on the take and who are getting paid off and making a lot of money. There's no question about it. But they're a very small percentage. And the vast majority of doctors go to their office every day or the hospital believing that they're going to do the right thing for their patient and trying to do the right thing for their patient. And what the doctors are doing is they're practicing, most of them, so-called evidence-based medicine. Their sin is not that they're trying to rip off their patients so they can make payments on their boat or Mercedes. Their sin is that they're being naive and not willing to understand that the vast majority of the scientific evidence that they rely upon to make their decisions is coming to them either directly or indirectly from the pharmaceutical industry and the medical device industry, and that they're being pawns, they're being used like pawns in the game. The sources of information that those doctors have been taught to trust through their many years of training have been are now being exploited by the commercial interests. And the doctors, it's just so frightening for a practicing physician to have to realize that the sources that they trust are no longer trustworthy. And that's what the doctors are guilty of, not having the courage to own up to this crisis we have in medical knowledge.
They're actually in the same boat as the patients that they treat. I mean, really,
That's exactly right. And when I'm involved in litigation, it never involves suing physicians. The physicians are victims of misinformation. The patients are victims of the consequences of that misinformation.
What is your opinion of, and this is actually, I want to make a statement before I ask this question. One of the reasons I think that mainstream media, Bloomberg, you pick it, don't come down hard on the pharmaceutical industry, like propagating the information about Pfizer's RICO loss and so on, is because they get a lot of money in the form of advertising from the pharmaceutical industry. Ever since the tobacco industry couldn't advertise anymore, the pharmaceutical industry pretty much picked up that ball. How do you feel about advertising drugs to end users?
Well, two different questions. One is the media and one is direct-to-consumer advertising.
Okay.
So first, the media. I would not have included Bloomberg as the lead of you know, setting up that question, because Bloomberg, which now acquired Businessweek, seems to be one of the most independent sources and willing to go at the golden calf of pharmaceutical knowledge. So
okay.
I wouldn't include them first.
I stand
but
corrected.
But I would say that the media is falling under hard times, especially the print media, the newspapers in particular. And it's advertising revenues that they desperately need. And if you look at the advertisements in the print media, you're going to see cell phones and cars, of course, and beer and so forth, but you're also going to see drugs. And they just can't afford to bite the hand that feeds them.
And when you see an ad for a drug, it usually includes 2 to 3 page facings. It's got a page facing about the drug, and then you flip the page, and it's got all of the warnings and required content to warn people about what the side effects are of the drug. I mean, usually it's 2 or 3 page facings. So this is a big advertising budget line here that we're talking about. And,
yes.
And I understand they can't bite the hand that feeds them. I understand that entirely. Okay.
Yes.
So what about medical journals? Doctors turn to medical journals. Isn't it the job of a medical journal to test the metal before they print something? Because aren't they basically endorsing, when JAMA publishes something, aren't they basically endorsing the science behind it?
Carl, this is the critically important question. The answer is no, they are not, and they cannot. but they are believed to be able to do it. I do a considerable amount of peer reviewing, and when an article is submitted to a journal, the editors look at it, see if it, you know, if it's in the running, if it seems to make sense on the face of it, if it's about a subject that is interesting to the readers of that journal, and if the editors think that it's in the running, then they ship it out to peer reviewers. Some journals do one peer review, some journals do three, it's do more. But the peer reviewers do not get all of the scientific evidence. They don't get access to the data from the trial. They don't get access to the study protocols to find out if the study's even reporting the right outcome measures. All they get is this, is the manuscript that's been submitted to the journal. So the peer reviewers and the editors from the journal are in no position to certify the integrity of the knowledge that's going to be printed and taken as if it's been vetted by practicing physicians. And I think when I'm asked what would help to solve this critical knowledge, I think one of the first things that's just so obvious would is one of the things that came in with Sarbanes-Oxley when it became clear that financial statements from our biggest corporations were being produced by accounting firms that had a conflict of interest and they were getting money put in their pocket by the company that they were supposedly doing an independent audit on. Huh. And Sarbanes-Oxley said, you can't do that. Well, it would be very simple for a drug company who sponsors a clinical trial, before that trial were published in a journal, before it were used in any way for marketing or education or continuing education of physicians, before it was used in any way to contribute to the knowledge pipeline, it could simply be audited by an independent statistician and clinician, and they could sign confidentiality agreements. They wouldn't have to blow the cover on the whole study. But if two independent, trained experts got to audit the real data, which is what the public and physicians believe peer review
right.
does, then they would find out, they'd be able to sort out about 80% of this misinformation that comes through the medical journals. But we don't have it.
And they're not going to start doing it. That's the truth.
They don't want to do it because they, you know, they got a golden goose going.
Right.
They can print information that is advantageous to their drugs. One thing I forgot to say before, we talked about 85% of the clinical trials being commercially funded and 97% of the most influential trials being commercially funded. But your listeners are going to say, so what, Dr. Abramson? Science is science. And good for the drug companies if they're willing to put money in the pot and take the risk on research. The problem is that the dice are heavily loaded because the odds are five times greater that a commercially funded trial will conclude that the sponsor's drug is the treatment of choice
yeah.
compared to exactly the same study that's non-commercially funded. The odds are five times greater.
Yeah, and that anybody who can't see that is just being naive. All right, let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we will pick it up with Dr. John Abramson, author of Overdosed America, The Broken Promise of American Medicine. Go to Amazon.com today and get a copy of this book. Educate yourself so that you can spread the word. There are a lot of people out there who still believe that the American medical system is only there to help and protect them. And it's up to us to create a grassroots campaign to get the word out so more and more people start questioning before they start taking drugs. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet,
and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences Uprising. We all know how effective amino acid supplements are. Well, get ready to be shocked. Amino acid supplements just reached a new level of strength. Say hello to Gear. Gear is super concentrated, super potent, and so bioavailable, it's equivalent to injectable amino acids. Gear is best used between meals to keep nitrogen balances tilted towards anabolism. Gear causes an increase in anabolic signaling that tells your muscles it's time to grow. Get Gear today by visiting needtobuildmuscle.net. Gear. This ain't your daddy's amino acid supplement. Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest, Dr. John Abramson. Dr. Abramson, we were talking about clinical research when we went into the break, but something else dawned on me. What about the people that actually author the guidelines for clinical research? Are those individuals independent, or are they usually... Do they usually work for the pharmaceutical companies or the medical device companies that they're that the studies are going to benefit?
Well, Carl, that's a very, very important question, because the guidelines that are made, whether it be cholesterol guidelines or high blood pressure guidelines or arthritis guidelines or any kind of guidelines, they set the standard for care that doctors are held to. And in malpractice cases, doctors, if they haven't followed those guidelines, they can expect to see the guidelines in court brought in by the injured party's attorneys. So the guidelines set the standards for doctors' report cards, measures of quality of care, and they have malpractice ramifications. They're very important. That said, 59% of the experts who participate in writing guidelines have active financial ties to a drug company that makes a drug that is being considered in the guidelines. Yeah. And for psychiatric drugs, the DSM manual is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual is the guide that psychiatrists use to diagnose their patients, and diagnosis then leads into treatment. And 100% of the sections of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Psychiatry, 100% of the consultants for the sections that have to do with conditions that have drug therapies have financial ties, or alleged to have financial ties, to the drug industry. So when doctors are following the guidelines that define the standards of care, those guidelines are being influenced, heavily influenced, the majority influenced, by doctors who are not independent but have financial ties to the drug makers.
Okay, with that being said, and you invoked the word cholesterol, lowering cholesterol and so on and so forth, I want to talk a little bit about cholesterol medications just for a second, because you shared with me that you were one of the co-authors of an article that appeared in the Archive of Internal Medicine about the Jupiter trial, which was... And I recently blogged about this because a group in the UK, I want to say a professor, Kusik Ray, and colleagues at University of Cambridge, they recently came to a similar conclusion after doing a meta-analysis of over 32,000 individuals. There's a trend right now. The companies that manufacture statin drugs are trying to broaden the net to get more people on statin drugs. And now they're saying, if you have other risk factors, but your cholesterol is normal, you should start taking a statin drug now. And doctors are starting to prescribe that. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, the article that I was a co-author in was actually in the same issue, last week's issue of the Archives of Internal Medicine, as that excellent meta-analysis that showed that people who don't already have heart disease, who are treated with a statin, who are at risk but don't already have heart disease, their risk of dying is not lowered by taking a statin. And ultimately, that's what we want to do, is decrease the mortality rate. but the Jupiter trial looked at 18,000 people who had normal cholesterol levels and elevated C-reactive protein levels, a marker of inflammation in the body. And it randomized 9,000 people to be treated with Crestor, a powerful cholesterol-lowering statin drug, and 9,000 people to be treated with a placebo. And the study was to go on for 4 or 5 years. The study was stopped prematurely at 1.9 years, and victory was declared by the for the Crestor group. They had purportedly a significantly lower death rate, and they had fewer cardiovascular events. And the article was announced at a major academic meeting, and it was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. And now the FDA has adopted the findings of that result and have actually allowed the label for Crestor to be changed to make that an indication for Crestor. And that adds more than 7 million Americans to the already 30 or 40 million Americans for whom statins are recommended. And the FDA has adopted that, and there are going to be new cholesterol guidelines coming out soon, and they will probably adopt that recommendation as well. There are several problems with this. The study was stopped early, and the point at which it was studied, there was absolutely no difference between the deaths that had occurred from heart disease and stroke in the Crestor group or the placebo group. There was no significant difference in the number of cardiovascular deaths. There was no difference in the number of serious adverse events that occurred in either group. That means people, the number of people who were hospitalized, who had prolongation of hospitalization, who incurred permanent disability or death or a birth defect or cancer. Those are the things that we want to avoid. Those were equal in both groups. So what we're seeing is a statistical blip in the death rate, and the Data Safety Monitoring Board that was overseeing the study stopped the study immediately, declared victory, and now 7 million more Americans are going to get put on statins. But, Carl, something much bigger than that happened in 2001, and the industry actually got away with it despite the fact that it was exposed. In 2001, the last time that the cholesterol guidelines were modified, the number of Americans for whom statins are recommended went from 13 million to 36 million on one day in May of 2001. And the vast majority of those 23 million people for whom statins became recommended did not have heart disease. They were
diabetic,
at risk of getting heart disease.
Oh, okay.
They were at risk of getting heart disease. And what happened is that the experts who wrote those guidelines said to doctors that there's absolutely firm scientific evidence that shows that women who don't have heart disease but are at risk benefit from taking a statin, and men over 65 who don't have heart disease but are at high risk benefit from taking a statin. And Jim Wright and I, Jim's the managing director of the Therapeutics Initiative in British Columbia, Jim Wright and I wrote an article that was published in The Lancet, one of the most prestigious journals in the world, and we showed that the people who wrote those guidelines were being dishonest about the scientific evidence. And I thought that there would be some kind of radical transformation in our approach to cardiovascular disease prevention, and nothing happened. And there it is. People can Google my name, John Abramson, and The Lancet in 2007, and cholesterol-lowering guidelines, and you'll see it in print that the guidelines were dishonest, and they were exposed, and nothing changed.
Why do physicians still to this day take the Hippocratic Oath? I mean, does the Hippocratic Oath even mean anything anymore, or is it just kind of like a rite of passage?
Carl, because the majority of practicing physicians are trying to do the right thing and believe that they're acting consistently with the Hippocratic Oath. They believe that. The problem is that the knowledge that they trust has been co-opted.
Yeah.
And they're not, it's just so frightening to doctors to think that they can't trust what they've been taught to trust, and we don't have a good source to replace it with, that it's just they can't handle it.
They, now, you know what? I disagree. I have to say this. I disagree that we don't have a good source. Doctors are intelligent, and the problem is they're pigeonholed into a system that doesn't give them the latitude, the time, or the incentive to do the work on their own. Doctors today have become, you know, like black box mechanics. You know, they don't fix anything. They just remove the whole thing and put a whole new unit in. I feel bad for doctors. I really, really do. But I think that they can make some changes. Just the way patients can start saying to their doctors, why? Why are you putting me on this drug? Aren't there any other choices, any other alternatives? Can I change my diet? Can I start exercising? Patients need to start taking control as well.
Yes, I agree completely. And both doctor and patient need to be armed with the information that the science shows unequivocally that adopting a healthy lifestyle, no matter what disease state you're in, vis-a-vis your cardiovascular risk, adopting a healthy lifestyle is going to be at least three times more effective at preventing heart disease than taking a pill. And that's what doctors and patients need to understand. And doctors have to understand that it's very hard for a person to change their habits. But the first thing that has to happen is both the doctor has to be committed to the importance of changing habits, and the patient has to be committed to the importance of changing habits. And if those two things happen, then there'll be positive results.
I want to call this the way I see it. It starts with academia. I say the universities and the schools that are training doctors are derelict of their duties if their curriculums do not include nutrition and information about nutrition and exercise. How can you send a doctor out into the world knowing that nutrition and exercise, we wouldn't have a healthcare problem today if people weren't eating poisons all day long and sitting around like sloths and not getting exercise. So how can a doctor even respond to that? He's a mechanic, but all he has is screwdrivers. That's all he has. He has no wrenches.
Well, Carl, there's truth, but it's a little more complicated because the doctors do get courses in nutrition and they do get courses in exercise. But because the medical schools themselves have now become so dependent on drug company and medical device company money for research and support of their educational activities, the medical schools themselves convey this implicit message that it's real medicine is practiced by giving drugs and doing lab tests and so forth, not by the sissy stuff of nutrition and exercise. So there's enough nutrition and exercise. So if you said what you just said, which I totally agree with, any medical school faculty would say, oh, no, no, you're wrong, Carl. We teach that. It's just that the doctors go out and they won't listen to it. The problem is that the real unconscious message that the medical students are trained into is that sort of sideshow stuff. Real doctors do real medicine, and that means you give pills and you give medical.
All right, let's take our last commercial break, and when we come back, we will close the show with Dr. Abramson. You can get a copy of his book at Amazon.com. It is a great book. Everyone needs to read it. You need to be armed with this knowledge, if not for yourself, to help others around you. Overdosed America, the broken promise of American medicine. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. drops. The name says it all.
A company committed to truth in advertising, to science-driven product development, a company that still believes in accountability to its customers. All American EFX is that company. With a full line of performance-enhancing aids like Prealkaline EFX Pro, muscle pump amplifiers like Nitrix EFX, growth and recovery enhancers like LBA Pro and LG5 Pro, and a fully tested core nutrition series. So if you want the very best in bodybuilding and performance supplements, go to any GNC or visit AAEFX.com today. That's AAEFX.com. All American EFX. We don't play games. We just help you win them.
Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get your today and join the LG Sciences Uprising. Life is a continuous journey, and Change Your Life Now gives you the tools for continuous empowerment. Change Your Life Now is a practical guide to the biological process of age reversal. It's deliberately understandable and concise, so you can employ its message immediately and begin to realize the changes within days. The reader need only provide a positive attitude, desire, and discipline, and the results are guaranteed. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Change Your Life Now banner ad to learn more or to order your copy today. Don't wait another moment. Change your life now. We all know how effective amino acid supplements are. Well, get ready to be shocked. Amino acid supplements just reached a new level of strength. Say hello to GEAR. GEAR is super concentrated, super potent, and so bioavailable, it's equivalent to injectable amino acids. GEAR is best used between meals to keep nitrogen balances tilted towards anabolism. GEAR causes an increase in anabolic signaling that tells your muscles it's time to grow. Get GEAR today by visiting needtobuildmuscle.net. GEAR. This ain't your daddy's amino acid supplement.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
You know, I read somewhere that the pharmaceutical industry's profits are down right now. That fewer and fewer people are accepting new prescriptions. Part of that could be because people are just so economically challenged that when it comes down to putting money forth for drugs, they're saying no. And part of it could be that people are starting to take control. They realize that, you know, the king has no clothes, and these drugs that they're being prescribed potentially could harm them. What do you think about that, Dr. Abramson?
Well, I think there may be some truth to that, Carl. But don't cry no tears, folks, when you're listening to this, because when you say the pharmaceutical company's profits are down, it means that the profit ratio on sales has gone down from 18% to maybe 16% of sales. The profit is 16% of sales.
Right.
Now, the average Fortune 500 company makes a profit of about 5% on sales.
Right.
So don't worry about your local pharmaceutical company being in the unemployment line.
No, I want them to be on. You know, there is good. There are drugs that are fantastic for rescue.
That's correct.
There is a place for all of this. The problem is that we become so dependent on it. I want to say one word to you. It's actually an acronym, and I want you to just say what you think about it. The FDA.
The FDA? The FDA is not publicly funded, and therefore its mission is not singularly to serve the public's interest. In 1992, when there were AIDS drugs in the pipeline, and the FDA was so underfunded that it couldn't get those AIDS drugs out to people who were dying, the drug companies made lemonade out of that lemon. And they said, we'll come to the rescue of the FDA. We'll pitch in to help pay for the FDA's budget. And now more than half of the division of the FDA, the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, that approves new drugs and oversees, than half of that drug industry. And there is no reason whatsoever that the American people don't have an FDA that's independent of commercial influence.
You know, I've always said on this show, I've been in business my whole life, and your clients are the people that you talk to every single day. You reach out to them, you talk to them. The FDA has never called me and said, Carl, how are we doing? Is there... But the FDA talks to the pharmaceutical companies. They talk to the medical device companies every single day. It takes every time a pharmaceutical company submits a new drug, they have to ante up $1 million to the FDA. We're talking about really a compromised relationship. What could be done? How can we change the FDA? Can we?
Well, all you need to do is fund it independently. But, Carl, I do want to say something. I've gone through a lot of FDA documents, and there are many, many wonderful public servants within the FDA who are good and honest scientists and work really hard to figure out whether drugs are going to be safe and effective for the American people. And I want nothing that I say to be dispiriting to the hardworking people within the FDA. This is a political problem, and it's at the top of the organization that interfaces with our political system. It's not the people who are the hardworking soldiers within the FDA.
No, and I've actually said that. I'll tell you something funny. There's a group of individuals that listen to my show, actually, over at the CDC in Atlanta, and I've come to know some of them, and they're good people. And they're just like you and I. They go to work and they want to do good for people. And I after meeting some people in government agencies like that, I've come to realize that it's not them. They come in and they do good work day in and day out. So I'm with you on that. And unfortunately, sometimes I feel like Reverend Al Sharpton. I'm trying to deliver a message, and sometimes you have to insult a few people to turn enough heads to get people to pay attention. So, I agree with you there. But again, I kind of feel like the FDA really just needs to be dismantled completely. I don't see how.
The first step is to just publicly fund it, get the politics out of it and publicly fund it.
But I think it needs to be publicly funded, but it also needs to be completely reassigned. I mean, all new individuals need to be put in place.
At the top, not
yes.
the workers.
Yes.
They're doing great work. And one other thing before we run out of time, Carl, I want to people say, well, geez, Dr. Abramson, you're so pessimistic about good medical knowledge. Where can people go to get good information?
Bingo.
Take your pencils out, because if you Google the Therapeutics Initiative, it's a nonprofit group in British Columbia that's publicly funded. And they do the best critical drug research, in my opinion, in the world. The only axe they have to grind is to get to the truth of the matter with as much information as they can get their hands on. So Therapeutics Initiative. And if they've written a newsletter or an article about the drug you're interested in, that's the best source for information.
Therapeutics Initiative. I'll check that out myself. We have about 5 minutes. What can people, naturally, each individual person out there who has a doctor and maybe is going to the doctor for different reasons, treatments and so on, they want the best possible care now. They can't wait for the dismantling and the changing and all that sort of stuff. What does a person do with their doctor in order to create the proper relationship?
That's a great question. And Carl, that's why I wrote Overdosed America. Because the truth of the matter is, when you subtract out all the commercial hype and the commercial interest trying to get us to focus on using their products and increasing their profits, when you take all of that out, the scientific evidence is very clear that 60 to 70% of our health is in our own hands. It's a product of how we live and where we live. What we put in our body, the choices we make, exercising, eating a Mediterranean-style diet, not smoking, drinking in moderation, those four things are enormously important in maintaining your health. Decreases your risk of heart disease by about 83%, your risk of diabetes by 91%, decreases the death rate for people over 65 by 60%, just by doing those four things. So there's a lot of money being spent on advertising and public relations to convince you listeners that you can't be healthy if you don't take expensive drugs and get expensive medical care, when the truth is that 60% or 70% of your health is a consequence of your own decisions. So you always, always, always want to ask your doctor what you can do to help you protect your health and to help you get over a problem or a condition or a disease that you're suffering from now. You always want that to be the default. Now, as Carl said earlier, about 10 minutes ago, there are good drugs, and the drug companies have done research that is life-saving. And I don't want anyone to get the message that I am against drugs. I think statin drugs do help protect people who already have heart disease. I think healthy lifestyle protects 3 to 5 times more. But I don't want people to get the message from me that I'm rejecting all of healthcare. But I do want you to get the message that unless you take responsibility for your healthcare, your chances of being optimally healthy are going to be compromised. And once you read the Overdosed America, if you do, please don't let it sit in your bookshelf. Please take the copy that you've read and give it to your doctor and ask your doctor to read it.
In fact, I had planned on making this plea at the end of this show. Those of you who are devout Superhuman Radio listeners, you know how much I appreciate you listening to the show. I'm not asking you to do this because I want to grow my audience. I'm asking you to do this, what I'm going to ask you next, because we really need to get this message out there. Lives are at stake. People are dying unnecessarily from conditions like polypharmacy and so on and so forth. And really, we need to understand that we have a larger role to play and have a greater impact on our own health and longevity than we think we do. Please pass this show around. There's an email option on the individual show page where you can send this show to other people. Please pass this show around, because we need more people to understand that this isn't the Wizard of Oz. There's nothing that the medical industry has for us necessarily that is magic. And it all does start with lifestyle. As Dr. Abramson just said so eloquently, the only thing I would add to that is sleep, because I think that's a big problem in this world today. Yep. But we know if you get to the gym 5 or 6 days a week and you train hard, we know the strongest individuals live the longest. We've done 3 shows on 3 different studies over the past 5 years that show strong individuals live longer. That's why I changed the motto of the show to live stronger, live longer. When I first started doing the show, the first year I started doing it, I used to close the show by saying, muscle is metabolic currency, so get into the gym and make a deposit today. We're also focused on making sure we have enough money in the bank for those golden years. But guess what? Who cares if you can't get out of your own chair? So get into the gym and start training, exercising. Don't make excuses to not exercise. Do it, because that right there is the cornerstone of health and longevity. Dr. Abramson, I hope everybody that's listening to the show goes out and gets the book. It's a great book. It's a great book for 2 reasons. Because for those who are not convinced, it will convince you, number one. But number two, because quite often we find ourselves in parties or at work talking about this sort of thing, and we wish we had the information at our tongue tip that we could just say, well, did you know, and did you know, to help change people's opinions and have them understand the truth that we're dealing with here. This book will endow you with the knowledge so that you can go out and tell people why you do the things and why you believe the way you believe. Dr. Abramson, I want to thank you. You want to add anything to that?
Carl, it's been a pleasure being with you, and I just want to support what you're saying. I serve as a consultant at Wells Fargo to try and help them advise people how to help their employees to be healthy. And a lot of the employers are putting in programs to incentivize people to lose weight. And that's not the thing that's important. The thing that's important is to get fit.
Bingo.
Just get fit. And that's the single most important thing you can do to improve your health.
That's it. That's it. You spoke it from your lips to God's ears. Okay, listen, Dr. Abramson, thank you very, very much for coming on Superhuman Radio today.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.
Okay. And we will see everybody tomorrow with another live episode of Superhuman Radio.